Welcome back. I wanted to continue a little bit talking about the string problem before we move on to more sophisticated things. I want to do the string problem again today, but instead of going from zero to pi, which is kind of an artificial thing to do, I'm going to go from zero to a length L. And I'm also, remember, if you do Newton's law, F equals ma, on a little piece of string and mess around with physics, you'll come up with the wave equation. So the distance u is the measure of the string away from the horizontal. So when it goes below, it's negative. When it's above, it's positive. And a little bit of physics shows that the wave equation holds, which is du dt squared equals c squared. And c squared always turns out to be c is the rate of propagation of the waves. And the way I'm going to do this today, we'll see that that's really, c is really the what I say it is. And boundary conditions, so these are called boundary conditions, I'll call them BC, are the string is tied down at the left end point, so u of 0t is 0 for all time, and it's tied down at the right end, so at L, it's also 0 for all time. Those are called boundary conditions. And the initial conditions. Now, today I'm doing the piano problem, not the harpsichord problem. So, with a string, with a piano, you whack the string with a felt hammer. That displaces the string, and it also gives it an initial velocity. So, and we're going to realize we need two conditions because we're going to get two constants when we solve this problem by Johann Bernoulli's method. So one initial condition is that you know the shape of the string at time zero. So you get this f of x thing is a given shape. And then you also know the initial velocity of the string. And that would mean you know the du dt at time zero. So that is a given velocity profile. So when you whack a piano, let's see, you whack a piano with a little hammer. So you have this little felt hammer and you whack it right here. So well, let's see, that would give you an f of x that's like a little bump. So this would be like the f of x. And the initial velocity would be very similar because you whack it with this hammer and it would give this, it would deform this little piece and it would also make it have a velocity that's a profile that's very similar. So when you whack it, you'd also get, maybe it'd be a different shape, but something like that. So it's deformed, and not only is it deformed, but it's given some initial oomph. That's the piano problem. And of course, it's going to lead to more interesting sound than a harpsichord, kind of more beautiful and melodious sound instead of a kind of harsh sound. This is the problem Bernoulli worked on. I did the simplified version of having G be zero in the harpsichord problem. But so Johann Bernoulli did separation of variables. You look for solutions of the form a function of x times a function of time. And you plug them into the differential equation and you get x double prime over x equals, and let's see, what the C, I'm going to stick the C in with the T problem. Because that's what happens when you plug it into the wave equation. We've done that a couple times now, so I won't do it again. And that's a function of x on the left and a function of t on the right. The only way that can happen is if they're both equal to a constant lambda. And the boundary conditions are what's called homogeneous. They're zero. So if you think about, that means if you add things that satisfy those zero boundary conditions, they're going to still satisfy those zero boundary conditions. That's why we look at the x conditions. Let's see, so ux at time zero is x of x times t of zero. And we want that to, that has to be zero for the string to be tied down there. And so we need this equal to zero. Because we don't, no, I'm sorry, what? What am I saying? I'm sorry, I got this all botched up. Let's see, at the left endpoint, I need that to be fixed for all time. So this is, I do need this to be zero. It's supposed to be x of zero. I don't want t of t to be identically zero, so this needs to be zero. And when you do the thing at this, this is a new one, at the other endpoint, instead of being pi, it's L. So I need x of L equal to zero also. That's the other boundary condition. So this needs to be zero. And so we got a new kind of Sturm-Liouville problem for the x problem. Sturm-Liouville. Problem. The x problem is x double prime of x minus x of x minus lambda times that is zero, subject to the not initial conditions, but boundary conditions. And we're looking for non-zero solutions to this problem. And it's going to be very similar to the cases we went through before when we were dealing with the pi problem. So, in fact, they ought to be exactly the same. The case lambda equals zero, those are linear things. And the only linear things that satisfy both endpoints zero would be the horizontal flat zero line. So no non-zero solutions. And let's see, the case lambda positive, that would give you exponential solutions. And the exponential solutions, you can make them zero at the left endpoint, but if you do that, then they go shooting up on the right endpoint. You can't make them both zero, except for the identical zero solutions. So no non-zero solutions. And so the case, the last case is the only time we get anything. The case lambda less than zero. Let's write lambda equals minus k squared. That's definitely k is a positive number, and this is going to be a negative number. And then we got x of x equals c1 cosine kx plus c2 sine kx. And so let's see, what do I need? I want to satisfy the boundary conditions. X of 0... Let's see, sine is 0 and cosine of 0 is 1. So that would be c1 times 1 plus c2 times 0. That's equal to c1, and we want that to be equal to 0. So c1 has got to be 0. That makes this part go away. And we're left with x of x is c2 sine kx. And so the last thing we need here is x of L. That would be c2 sine kL. And we sure don't want the c2 to be 0, too, also, because that would give us only the 0 solution. So we want that to be 0, but we don't want c2 to be 0, because that would mean this thing is identically 0. That would just give us the 0 solution. So we got to have sine kL equals 0. So this is different than before. So we need, and that's going to tell us what lambdas are possible. Sine k times L equals 0. Well, remember the graph of sine. Here's the graph of sine. It's 0 at pi, 2 pi, 3 pi, etc. And so we're going to need kL to be a multiple of pi. So kL, we need to be an integer multiple of pi. For n equals, not 0, because this thing is positive. What the heck? Looks like for n equal 1, 2, 3, etc. And so that means k has got to be n pi over L.
Why does k have to be positive?
Lambda's got to be negative. Mm-hmm. So I'm making, and because I'm going to take this, that would give me the square root of lambda.
Okay.
See, it'd be the square root of minus lambda. So I'm writing this minus k squared, so I don't have to write the square root of something all the time. It's just a convention. You'll find that people doing it all the time. If something's, especially when they take the square root to write out the solution. So the first person who did this wouldn't have done that. And then he would be finding himself taking the square root of minus lambda. And that's a positive number. I'm calling that k, basically. Okay, so I got a bunch of solutions this way. For each n, I get an xn. For each n, I get xn of x is a constant times sine n pi x over L. That's a new kind of Fourier sine series. Instead of being nx, it's n pi x over L. Notice if L is pi, the pi's cancel. And now we go back to the time. Now that we've solved for x, we can go back to the time problem. The t problem was t double prime 1 over c squared. Where'd the c go? Yeah, it's 1 over c squared times t prime over t equals the lambda. And I'm taking lambda equal minus, it's going to be minus n pi over L squared. My k had to be n pi over L. And so notice the c goes in there, and I get a t problem now that's t double prime plus c n pi over L squared t equals 0. And that's the simple harmonic motion, second order constant coefficient ODE. And it has solutions. I get, for each n, I get tn of t equals c1 cosine cn pi over L times T plus C2 sine Cn pi over L times T. In fact, I can call those constants, I should call those constants something. I think I'll call them A and B. And they might be different for An would be there and Bn would be here, different for different n's. And now remember when I had a C in my front of my X? There it is. I'm going to take that C to be equal to 1 because I've got plenty of constants in the T problem. And if I didn't do that, when I multiply Xn in front here, I could absorb that C in my An and my Bn. So now I've got a whole bunch of solutions. So finally, my un of t, for each n, I get a un of xt is xn of x times tn of t. That's automatically going to, so it solves the boundary conditions, it solves the partial differential equation. The only thing it doesn't solve is the initial condition. And in fact, it's kind of hopeless to solve the initial condition because it's just one thing and it's not going to give me any old f. It gives me something very specific. So now the big idea is because of the homogeneity and the linear business, I can try u of xt is a sum of these things. Let's see, the sine one, the x one was sine n pi x over L, and now my t functions are an cosine c n pi t over L plus bn sine c n pi t over L. That's the solution Johann Bernoulli found, and the problem now, finally, is to mess around with the initial conditions. So finally, the initial conditions would tell me that u at time 0, let's see, all the cosine 0 terms would be 1. And so then I would get a Fourier a sine series. That's a sum as n goes from 1 to infinity of bn. What? I'm sorry. The sine ones are 0. At time equals 0, all the sine terms are 0, and the cosines are 1. So that would give you an sine n pi x over L. And we want that to be equal to f of x, the initial piano shape. These turn out to be orthogonal, exactly like, except they're orthogonal not from 0 to pi, but from 0 to L. And so these are orthogonal, and you can find what they have to be by exactly the same technique we did before. So these are orthogonal. On the interval from 0 to L. And so what did I do? When I realized they were orthogonal, I'd multiply by one of them, say sine 7 pi x over L. I'd multiply both sides and integrate, and all these integrals would be 0 except the one that happened against 7 and 7. And that would be the integral of a square, and I can calculate that and get a number. And when you do that business, exactly like we did before, we find that the an has to be 2 over L, that's the number you get when you integrate the square, L over 2 actually, times the integral from 0 to L of f of x sine n pi x over L. So that's the general Fourier sine series on the interval from 0 to L. It's very similar. The 0 pi thing made it kind of easier for us. a little bit. So I've got a little one piece of my solution figured out, the AMs. And now to get the BNs, that's the velocity profile. So let's see, what's my U? There it is. When I take du by dt of that, I wish I could keep that on the screen. Maybe I'll do, I can only do this. I'm going to copy this thing. And I'll rewrite it down here. Paste. There it is. Now I'm going to take du by dt of that. let's see, that would be a sum as n goes from 1 to infinity. The sign, the x stuff would just sit there. And let's see, when I take du by dt of cosine, I would get derivative of cosine to sine, and this cn pi over l would come out front. And when I differentiate sine, I get, I'm sorry, when I differentiate cosine, I get minus sine, don't I? So there'd be a minus there. And when I differentiate sine, I'll get cosine, but the cn pi over l comes out in front. And the derivative of sine is cosine. That's painful to look at for a second. But when I stick in the zero, time equals zero, du dt of x at time equal to zero, a lot of that stuff goes away. All the sine terms go away, and all the cosine terms are one. So this is a sum as n goes from 1 to infinity. The sine terms just sit there, n pi x, oh, let's see. Where's my number? My number that's going to pop out in front now is going to be cn pi over l bn, and the sine stuff just goes along for the ride. That's a Fourier sine series, and that we want to be equal to the velocity profile of the hammer hit. And so from that we see, aha, this number has to be the sine coefficient for that g. And using orthogonality again, this is the Fourier coefficient. So the Fourier sine series coefficient. For g. And so let's see, what is that? That means that cn pi over l bn would need to be the Fourier sine series coefficient. That would be 2 over l integral from 0 to l of the g of x times sine n pi x over l dx. And then you solve this for the bn. Find the L's cancel and you get a 2 over pi, n pi n. So those go to 0 really fast. The BNs do. And now I've determined all my solutions. I've got the BNs and I've got the ANs. I've figured out what they have to be. And you can actually, I can, if in Maple, if I wanted to, I could actually crank those out, write them all out, and do it. And say, aha, that's a beautiful solution. It actually does what I said it's going to do. It's a fun thing to do if you like messing around with numerical things and computers and animations. But, so this is what Bernoulli did. It was easier with the harpsichord because I didn't have this second thing to mess with, but that gives you the full-blown picture. Now I want to write out... I guess I'm going to make my life easier once again. But I by taking the g to be 0, so this is going to be a plucked thing again. Before I do it, though, I'm going to use some trig identities. I'm going to show you why Johann Bernoulli lost the identities. Let's see, the trig identities I need are sine alpha times cosine beta. I think in your homework you were deducing things like this by doing fancy playing around with a complex exponential. So let's see, it's 1/2 sine alpha plus beta plus sine alpha minus beta. And the other one I need is sine alpha sine beta is 1/2 cosine alpha minus beta minus cosine alpha plus beta. I'm going to use those to show you how you go from Johann Bernoulli's solution to Jakob Bernoulli's solution. And it's actually going to be easy. So here's the deal. Let's write my u of x t is a sum. Okay, I'm going to make my f something and my g equal to 0. That's going to make my life a little bit easier. Let's take g of x to be the 0 function. And f of x is the initial shape. And of course it's given. That means that all the bn terms are going to be equal to 0. And so what I get from my u is u of xt is a sum as n goes from 1 to infinity, an, where those are the Fourier coefficients for f, times sine nx, n pi x over l times cosine c n pi x over l, t over l. And now all I'm going to do, I'm only going to use the first trig identity. It turns out right now I don't need the second one. If I was going to do the full blown problem, I would need the second one too. But all I need is the first one. I've got a sine times a cosine here. And so when I use that, let's see, what is it? It's 1/2 the sine of the plus and then sine of the difference. So when I use the trig identity, this is going to be a sum from 1 to infinity, an times 1/2 sine of the plus. Okay, the plus would be n pi, what's the plus? N pi over L x plus ct. And then the difference would be sine n pi over l can be factored out times x minus ct. And now, if you stare at that for a second, you realize, what the heck? This sum, so here's, f of x is equal to the sum as n goes from 1 to infinity of a n sine n pi x over l. Look at that. That's sine n pi something over l, but in place of the x is x plus ct. And there's a half that comes out in front. So when you look at your solution there, you see that u of xt, I can pull the half out in front. I pull this half out in front, then I have a sum of an sine n pi over l times something. And that's exactly this formula where the x is equal to x plus ct. So the mind-blowing thing is that this appears to be f of x plus ct. And when you do the same thing to the second part, it's this series, but in place of x is going to be x minus ct. And so Johann did all that work, and then he comes down to this thing here, and this is the solution Jakob got. So no wonder that the old man said, Jakob wins. This is easy, beautiful, simple to write down, and fantastic. And obviously Johann was doing all this crazy stuff. He didn't know these things converged. But what Johann discovered was that you could decompose signals in terms of basic sine waves, which turned out to be an incredibly important and useful thing, and had much greater consequences down the road. But this is actually a solution, and we can check it now. This is Jakob's solution. And he was the winner. Is it really? Let's check. Let's see. If I were to take, let's calculate, for example, d by d, let's see. If I differentiate d by dx of something like f of x plus ct, that would be equal to f prime of x plus ct plus the derivative with respect to x of x plus ct, so times 1. And the second derivative, you do it again. That would be f double prime of x plus ct times another 1. When you do the same thing with respect to C, you get d by dt of f of x plus ct. That would be f prime of x plus ct. This is just the multivariable change rule. But when I differentiate now d by dt of this inside thing, the d by dt of x would be 0, and the d by dt of ct would be c. So a c comes out. And when I do it again, I'd get a d by dt squared of f of x plus ct. Another derivative would pile on. And now I'd get a c squared. And now you can see, aha, d by dt squared is c squared times d by dx squared. So sure enough, this thing satisfies the wave equation. And you can do the same thing with the minus ct. It's exactly the same. You have a minus c come out here, and when the minus c comes out again, you get c squared, which would be positive. So the minus c, the work would be exactly the same. So what you see is that d2u dt squared equals c squared d2u dx squared. Check. And similarly for the other one. And so that it satisfies the PDE. Does it satisfy the initial condition? Let's think about that. So we've got u of xt is a half of f of x plus ct plus f of x minus ct. Let's plug in time equals 0. Let's see. What do I want? Yeah, u of x at time 0 is going to be 1 half f of x plus 0 plus f of x minus 0. That's f of x. So amazing, it satisfies the initial condition. And so now I could animate that harpsichord problem very simply. This is a much easier thing to animate than the summing of Fourier series was. So in fact, if you think about it, f is only defined from 0 to L, but if you're adding ct here, you're leaving the interval from 0 to L in no time. So actually, when you think about what Bernoulli's solution is doing, so here's something to think about. What happens when x plus ct or x minus ct leaves the interval from 0 to L? Because that's the only place where f is defined. And here's a good place to go back and look at Johann's solution and realize what those functions are outside the interval from 0 to L. Remember, those sine functions were all odd, and they're all periodic of period 2 pi. So what I should take in my solution is, let's see, the odd periodic extension. So let's let f star be the odd periodic extension. Let's see, the odd L, 2L periodic is what I mean to say, not 2 pi periodic. The odd 2L periodic extension of f. So let's see, a picture would be let's have 0, here's L, here's minus L. So let's say f looks like this. How about a little bump? That's like a little harpsichord bump there. I don't like that. I want it flat, triangle, then like that. Okay, the odd extension now would be the same thing, except the little triangle would bulge out this way. So that's the odd extension. So that's the odd extension. And now I want to do a periodic extension, which means I go like that. This would be 3L here, and it would go and this would be minus 3L. Okay, so this little green piece here, that's F. But the whole thing is F star. That's the odd periodic extension. And that's what you want to put in Jakob's solution to this problem. So the correct thing to have for the solution that would work now would be 1 half f star x plus ct plus f star of x minus ct. Solves the problem, the pluck problem. And so the question is, how did Jakob think of this?
He probably guessed it. He probably played around writing out specific solutions and realized this X plus CT thing, you could make more and more solutions. And then when he started writing out these two solutions and plugging in the initial conditions, he figured out what the Fs had to be. Many years later, D'Alembert made this method scientific. And that's what I want to show you next time. That's why I'm slowing down kind of to savor this stuff, because it's fantastic math. How to derive this directly. That's the topic of next time. How to figure this out in a more straightforward way. In a straightforward way. And that's the story of D'Alembert's method. Not D'Alembert, it's D'Alembert's. And it's based on a change of variables. So you make new variables. One variable is going to be X plus CT, and the other variable is going to be X minus CT. So the D'Alembert's method is going to be a change of variables. I hate writing xi. I hate saying xi. Maybe I'll think of different variables, but let's take u and v for the time being. U is going to be x minus ct, and v is going to be x plus ct. And then the wave equation becomes something easy. It's going to become du dv of the function. Now, I already used, I used a u now and a v. That's a bummer. So I need a new thing for my function. How about w? That's a much simpler equation to solve, and I'm going to show you how to solve it next time. As a first step, I want to solve the easiest PDE there is. So step one, solve the easiest PDE. Which is, let's go back to little u's. This is a first order one. du dx is 0. And I've got a function of two variables, u of x, y. All right, if you think about this, remember what a partial derivative is. It means hold y constant and differentiate with respect to x. So that means if I look in the xy plane, if I hold y constant, and if I differentiate, so that means the derivative with respect to x or along this horizontal line is equal to 0. Maybe I'll call that y naught. X, y naught is identically 0. That means that u has got to be constant along this horizontal line. Okay, that's nice to know. And u, if I did it on a different horizontal line, it'd have to be constant on that horizontal line. But they could be different constants. So you see that we see that u is constant on horizontal lines. But it might be different horizontal, it might be different constants. So if you think about it, the constant would be C of y naught here. And over down here it might be C of y might be something different. And when you think about it that way, that's a function of y. So the solution is u of x, y is a function of y.
And you can check, okay, yes, this does solve that differential equation. And it exactly, it's an if and only if thing. Check, now I have to check that this does solve it. It does, because it's constant. When I differentiate with respect to x, I get 0. And when I have something that solves this differential equation, this is true. Interesting thing, though, is I can get solutions which are kind of not so smooth, right? If c is a crummy function, let's say it's just continuous but not differential, I've got solutions which are, they're nice and smooth in the x direction, but they can be kind of crummy in the y direction. So if you want a smooth solution, the c is going to have to be smooth. But that's just something you have to live with. And you certainly wouldn't want c to be discontinuous, because that would give you a really weird, creepy u. So usually we'll try to choose c to be nice as we need. And so that's really all you have to know to do D'Alembert's method. First you undo one of those derivatives and get a solution, then you undo the other one, and whammo, you get Yonker-Bernoulli's solution. And I'll do it carefully next time. Any last minute questions about anything? I had a request to write out solutions to the homework, so I did that, and I'll post them on the homepage for you to see. I'm not going to write out every gory little detail, but I'm going to give you at least the stuff that's more routine. I'll give you a hint about how to do it. Okay, that feels like a good place to stop today.
Is this yours, or is this the bottle I left last week?
It might be the one. It's not mine.
Yeah. No, just like, because it's recent, but if you click on the